On the KSRO live line is Phil Melendez. He is a former resident inmate at San Quentin, now a program manager for an organization called Restore Justice. Good morning to you, Phil.
Good morning.
Can I ask you what you were in for?
Yeah, sure. So in 1997, I committed two acts of homicide, assault with a deadly weapon, and was ultimately convicted of second-degree murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and gun enhancements.
How long were you on the inside?
I was incarcerated for nearly 20 years.
Wow. And then obviously you decided to take a different route on your way out.
Definitely. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible thing that I did. I definitely have sincere remorse and regret everything that I've done. But in order for me to come home, I had to actually go to the parole board and be found suitable for parole in front of mostly law enforcement background parole board commissioners. And, you know, basically I had to show them that I was safe to be their neighbor. And so that took a lot. It took a lot of introspection. It took a lot of work, hard work, digging deep into my childhood traumas, which all lifers basically have to do. And I was found suitable and came home and working for Restore Justice, as you mentioned, and making my living amends. We work with survivors. I facilitate dialogues with people who've lost loved ones to violence, to homicide, and try to promote as much healing as I can. I mean, we as lifers, we make huge changes, you know, in our mind state, and we have to become completely different people than the person, than the oftentimes children that we were when we committed these horrible crimes.
Yeah, that is quite the turnaround, exactly the kind of turnaround that we'd love to hear about. And Phil, talk about the conditions in San Quentin, particularly, you know, with the COVID-19 virus running rampant through the prison.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. So I have been through norovirus, Legionnaire's disease while in San Quentin, and just hearing the cops, you know, every when I walk down the tier, every cell you pass, it's like hacking coughs, and it's terrible. The physical distancing is impossible. The cells are I think 5 by 10, and even on the tier, it's like 3 feet wide. So if you pass somebody, there's no way to keep 6 feet.
Yeah.
Everything's communal. The showers, there's I think 12 to 14 or maybe 18 or so shower heads for probably the total is 30. Grand total shower heads for 800 people, I think 12 to 15 phones for same amount of people, and people have to talk to their families. They have to at least check in and say, hey, I'm okay. But in the meantime, or in between calls, there's no disinfectant going on, or at least a subpar of disinfectant. There's no trained hazmat, you know, airborne infectious disease cleaning crew that takes care of these things. So it's a pretty terrible situation. And as far as the situation at San Quentin itself, what happened is there were zero cases in March, and then on March 30th, 121 people were transferred from the California Institute for Men, also known as Chino.
Yes.
And they that was a hotbed, or a huge there was a huge outbreak there, and 16 of the 20 deaths at the time were actually at Chino. And so they transferred these people from Chino to San Quentin. And from what I'm told, they were tested, I think maybe a few days prior. And once they were tested, they were sent back to the general population to mingle with the rest of the population, which, as I just said, had a huge outbreak. And so from there, they went from Chino to San Quentin. And I think even also some of them went on to Susanville, which we're also seeing a spike in cases now. But that's basically what happened at San Quentin. And now, as we keep getting reports, I mean, every time I get a report, maybe it's hours later from the last report, it jumps higher and higher. And right now, the last I've heard, it was over 1,000. So, and I've seen projections of double that in at least the next 10 days.
What can be done for, you know, we've talked and the governor has talked about releasing prisoners early as a result of this uncontrolled outbreak. And in a lot of cases, though, those prisoners don't have anywhere to go, and they won't be let go until they have somewhere to go, as I understand it.
Yeah, that I hate to hear that. I've heard, I think the number was 100, and 40 of them didn't have a place to go. I can count on my phone, you know, my contacts, myself included, people that would be willing to put people up, whether, you know, it's a 14-day period in a hotel, in our own homes, open our doors. Over 40 people on my phone, at least. I've seen, we did a town hall recently, and we talked about, you know, the need for housing. I talked to the county of Marin specifically, you know, to utilize some of the resources, because, you know, Marin is where San Quentin is located.
Yep.
People are going to the hospitals, outside hospitals, because, you know, prison hospitals aren't equipped to receive this type of or any major medical issues, basically. And so it's clogging up Marin. It's a big problem in Marin. So on this town hall, we mentioned the fact, like, hey, utilize your resources. And I've gotten emails and comments from folks that, hey, I'm finding donations here, I'm finding donations there. So one of the most common things that I've seen during the town hall, during the chat, as I'm watching the Zoom, people are saying, I'll take care of my husband. I got mine over here. I'll take care of this, you know. And so I think just the fact that he said that there's 100 people, 40 people don't have places to go. There are numerous transitional houses all across the Bay Area, all across California, where, you know, you can, there, all of that could probably be taken care of just through transitional housing alone. And then that's not even considering the fact that people are more than happy to take care of their loved ones. I remember one woman said, I'll go pick up my husband right now.
Yeah, sure.
And so I feel like that's just a fallacy, political stunting, just to, like, you know, it's on one hand, I feel like it would be political suicide to do mass releases, right?
Because
backlash. There'll be so much fear. There'll be that one person that commits one crime, and then, you know, boom, your political career is done. But on the other hand, mass death, that's also not a good look for a politician. So I feel like there's, you know, it's like you're trapped between a rock and a hard place. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And so I would just urge the governor to err on the side of human life, and, you know, don't worry about maybe some property crime here and there.
Very good, Phil. I appreciate you being on this morning, and we'd love to have you back and just spend some time talking about Restore Justice, okay?
Definitely. We'd love to talk about that. And if I have just a few seconds, I would just like to say that I myself as a lifer am not an exception. As my friend Erlon always says, we are the reflection. We come home, we do good, we have the lowest recidivism rate, and that violent versus nonviolent release is just a fallacy. We can come home and do good, and to keep us in and force us to death is a travesty, and it's an affront to humanity.
Very good. Phil Melendez, thanks for being here this morning.